Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's Thursday.
It is.
But you're here, so that puts us one up on last week, where you were not here.
I went all the way down to Tennessee, and Stephen wouldn't let me in the house to record with you guys, so it was really disappointing.
That's, you know.
I knocked and everything. He yelled at me. I heard him.
It's like the olden days. I also had to sub in for Mike on Monday for upgrade. So
right, yeah,
it's like the olden days where people are traveling and not able to do their podcasts. It's strange.
Yes, except we are all generally very fearful.
Well, yes. You don't want to miss a podcast. That's terrifying.
Well, that's the problem. Yes, it's the. Who wants to miss a podcast? I'm so used to it. This is my only human contact, Jason.
So I'm looking at our story list for this week, because this is a thing that I do, is I go to the archive page, sixcolors.com/archive. Check it out, people. It's just a list of stories. But although, let me tell you, sidebar, WordPress does not want to do archives with links to headlines. They're like, no, every archive page is just a blog page with all the stories on it. I'm like, no, I don't want the story text on my archive page. No. I just want the headlines. And that took a lot of work. So, but anyway, if you go there, like I do, and you look at what we did this week, it was Mac Pro update week. Go figure. The Intel Mac Pro got an update. That's hilarious, and you know,
weird. It does give some credence to that rumor that was going around that there would be another Intel Mac Pro before the next one. Like the transition.
Right. I mean, the rumor is that there's a new version of the Intel Xeon that Apple's going to use for this. I mean, the rumor's not about the Xeon. I think there is a new generation of that, but the rumor is that there is one more Intel Mac Pro with the new Xeons that they're gonna release. But this was, I mean, the way they did it was very much like, hey, we have some new options, and they're also, you know, you can also build them in. So is that a new Mac Pro? It's not. It's just some new graphics cards, basically.
Right.
But it's good.
It's not dead, is the thing, right?
And
like, it's still going.
This is what Steven wrote about. Is, by the way, classic Six Colors listeners will
know.
Yeah,
I can hear it.
My laundry's going, so enjoy. This is the verisimilitude that makes this different from other podcasts, is that I don't care that the laundry's going in this one. If the cats meow, if somebody comes in, I don't care. It's fine, because we're just hanging loose here. That's the thing. So Steven wrote about this and said, like, because he has a Mac Pro, right? And he's like, this is Apple keeping its promise that it's gonna, you know, flexibility is the goal, and so, like, you know, new graphics card, put it out there and let them buy it and plug it in, spend thousands of dollars, but the people who are buying this, it's worth it to them to do that. And and that's why the Mac Pro will be the last Intel machine to go away, is because Apple's going to support it, and Apple is going to have to work hard to reach up all the way up to where Mac Pro performance is. So, you know, it's fine. It's just funny because it's like, I don't know if we're quite there yet, but we may be at the point where it's sort of like, all right, Intel. I mean, I know they still sell an Intel Mac Mini. They still sell two Intel MacBook Pros. They still sell an Intel iMac. But, you know, we're getting to the point where Intel seems like a past era almost. And we're not quite there yet, but we're in that moment of transition where that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a process, right? I mean, you know, people have talked about the fact that, like, the older Mac Pros usually stayed on the market for a long time. And so part of me feels like having a last-ditch sort of Intel Mac Pro, which is like, look, if you absolutely need an Intel processor to get your work done, you can buy a Mac Pro, you know, when we release sort of the latest and greatest, and just sort of ride that out. And by the time that you need to replace it, you know, the Apple Silicon stuff hopefully would be, you know, several years into its existence and would be solid enough that you could transition your workflow. But if that's what you need, you know, to get the job done for the next 6 or 7 years, we're hopefully going to, like, provide you the hardware you need. And they've shown they're perfectly willing to leave a Mac Pro on the market for 6 or 7 years without, in some cases, without doing very much. But yeah, I think it makes sense to me, given that, like, you know, like you said, the upgradability and sort of doing different components was a key promise of this, and a big reason that they revamped the trash can Mac, which the trash can Mac Pro had very little in the way of upgradability. That was their attempt to sort of be like, ooh, we know how to make computers better than before. And the answer was, turns out we like them the way they were. So yeah, I was, I guess it's good that those graphics cards showed up. I'm not a person who owns a Mac Pro and much less is in the market for a $5,000 graphics card to put in it, but glad that option is there for the people who need it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly, that's, or the people who want it, even if they don't need it.
Who would do that? Who would spend $5,000 on a graphics card they don't need?
Well, graphics cards is true. It's true. That would be beyond the pale. They wouldn't do that. I don't know. What else? Quiet week. Really quiet week this week.
Not much going on.
Google did one of these pre-hype announcement kind of things that everybody does except Apple. Pre-announcing their new phones that you can't get. But the real notable thing there is that they have a new chip. They built their own mm-hmm. system on the chip, which was, you know, reported for a long time, but here it is. And, you know, the way they describe it, I linked to it on the site, and I said, this is actually a pretty good description of Apple's chip strategy, right? It's like, this is why you make your own chip. And right. Google is very much taking a page out of Apple's book, which is interesting in the sense that, you know, this has been, Android has been largely powered by Qualcomm, and that Google's sort of like, maybe we could do better. But I'm also like, I mean, Gruber said it in his post on Daring Fireball, which is exactly what I was thinking and said to a couple of people in a Slack, which is, I'll believe it when I see it. Like, I'm excited about the new Pixel 6. They are really being aggressive here. But the truth is, Google's going to need to prove that they're capable of selling a phone.
Sure.
Because they make
yeah.
these great phones that are really nice, and they basically nobody buys them. And so, okay, now they've built their own chip. And so my link basically said, I don't know if this phone is going to be successful, but I suspect that Google's system on a chip strategy is going to be successful, that Google is going to try and get that. If the Pixel phones don't succeed, they're still going to be building a system on a chip for Android, and I would imagine that they will have a lot of hardware partners that will want their system on a chip for Android.
Right, and I think also it's a point of Google realizing potentially that this isn't a, you know, 1 year plan, right? Like, they can, if this phone doesn't do well, I think what's one of their strengths is that they have enough money and the ability to say, like, all right, you know, this was our first year rolling this out, and maybe this did, maybe it did just well enough that we're like, next year we'll make one. Mm-hmm. And like, if it gets good reviews, people will stick with it, or people will be convinced to buy another Google phone. I think they can afford to take a couple year strategy on this.
They got all the money, so they can.
Right,
but
so,
if you look at their track record, like, they're
sure,
Google is a
yeah.
failure as a phone maker. That's
yeah,
not
I'm
their
not
thing.
Disputing that. It's just like, if this is, you know, if they're going to turn it around, it's probably not going to happen in 1 year.
Probably not
is
overnight.
My guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, my guess is that the Pixel 6 may sell well. I don't think it will necessarily sell like in iPhone numbers or high-end like Samsung Android numbers or something. But the question is, will it sell well enough for them to feel like this is worth investing another year in, because we're seeing the promise of like us being able to build the chip, the
right.
SoC and stuff like that. So yeah, I agree. I looked at the Pixel 6 in the sort of pre-release stuff that they showed off, and it's like, all right, there's some interesting stuff there. And I think, you know, Gruber also made the point that this is good because it encourages competition with Apple. And it feels like right now, though Apple has competitors in the smartphone space and competitors that sell a lot of phones, the high end is, you know, Apple has a pretty good showing in the high end. And I think encouraging, you know, some of these competitors to mm-hmm. build their phone sort of from the ground up provides more competition, and it encourages Apple to get better. And we've already seen that with all the photo stuff that Google does, both in its own phones and other phones, you know, and other Android-related phones. I think there has been a bit of an arms race in cameras because it's one of the things that drives smartphone sales. So if the stuff that they do there continues to improve, it will encourage Apple to work harder, and I think that's good for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I want Google. My skepticism is very much that I keep being excited about Google, especially since I like stock Android, and I don't like the overlays that some of these companies, I mean, like Samsung does. And I know there are people who like Samsung's interface thing, but I think Samsung's, they're better than they used to be, but I think they're bad at it. And so getting a nice, standard, clean Android phone is from Google is good, but they've never succeeded. So as much as I'm rooting for them, really, because I think Apple needs competition, and it spurs Apple along, and that places, sometimes Apple gets complacent. So like you said, you know, this is a good spur to Apple, especially from a company that does some stuff better than Samsung does, right? Samsung can spur Apple in some ways, but I think Google can spur Apple in some different ways. But again, like, I just need to be convinced that they are going to be relevant. And right. I think the chip feels relevant to me, but I may be optimistic about that. It may be that Google's like, we did our own system on the chip. And everybody else is like, yeah, we're going to just use Qualcomm. It's fine. And that could be a flop too. But I'm hoping that there's something here. And definitely it exists as a validation of another part of Apple's strategy, which is their chip strategy. That Google, like, details, we were able to build in all of these machine learning based things and improvements to our photos and all of these things because we were able to put it on the chip. And like, Yeah, that's Apple's been saying that for the last like 7 years.
Good idea. Where'd you ever come up with that idea, Google?
But that's the thing is you learn
it's where the market is too, right? Like, you know, Apple's showing off all the stuff it can do with the integration of hardware and software. And at a certain point, if you're saying we're not going to bother doing that, you're just going to fall behind because it's hard to compensate for that.
And I feel like what's motivating Google here, and this is probably, again, who knows how it's going to turn out, but what seems to be motivating Google here is a frustration. In part, I would imagine that Qualcomm is essentially a year plus behind Apple at all times. And so all Android phones, it reminds me of when the Mac was always judged based on web browser speed, and that was because they were using IE and it was slow, and that's why they did Safari, right? It's like we're tired of someone else determining how people judge our product. Well, Qualcomm determines how people judge Android, essentially. And so I get Google being like, in a very Apple-like maneuver, like maybe we should take control of this because maybe we could do a better job than Qualcomm at building this like purpose-built system on a chip for Android. And so, like, great, that's a good idea. And also the idea that maybe their priorities as the platform vendor were not being as prioritized by Qualcomm, right? Like, if you're Google and you're the platform vendor, you want your chips to really focus on wherever you're going and also where you're going down the road, right? You want to spend sort of years building a pipeline where you're, you know, you've got features rolling out and that the chip development is moving along like what Apple does. And I wonder if the Google, I really actually would like to read more about this because I'm kind of fascinated about it now as I talk about it. But the idea that Google looks at the Qualcomm relationship is like, really sort of like, we don't get to decide where Qualcomm's, we can be influential, but that's not the same as deciding where the chip roadmap for Android phones is going.
Yeah.
So,
this was a thing I wrote about a little bit in my Macworld column about how Apple, and then we've talked about a bunch before, which is about control and why Apple builds so much of its own hardware stuff and why it's increasingly building this. And it was mentioned, I believe, briefly in one of the analyst questions on the financial call last week, where somebody asked Tim, how do you pick sort of which things to invest in strategically, right, as opposed to which things you're going to buy or license from other companies? And, you know, I think the clear answer is stuff that is really, really closely tied to what we're trying to do, right? Apple buys a lot of companies that are either focused on things that are, you know, they've bought some hardware companies, right, in terms of they bought Intel's modem business, right, because cellular communication chips are integral to the iPhone. If you didn't have one of those, we would all be walking around with iPod touches right now, and the world would look very different. In the same way that they've spent a lot on buying AI companies in the last several years, because AI and machine learning is stuff that is integral to the features and the development that they want to do. So having that sort of control over the whole thing, which has always been an Apple ideal, is something that makes a lot of sense. The higher that you get in these in the like complexity of these devices and the more tuned they are, right? Like when you're talking about a smartphone, everything has to be very purpose-built and very, you know, created within tolerances. It's got to fit in a little box. It's all got to work really well together. And if you get control over all those parts, as opposed to buying different parts off the shelf and having to work with whatever they do, or trying to get your partners to design things to your specifications, you know, your power and your control and the things you can do get a lot better.
Yeah, again, I would like to see them succeed, quite frankly, because I think they're a better steward of Android than Samsung is. Sorry to be down on Samsung. Samsung's wildly popular, and their hardware is impressive, and I think that their software is still kind of junk. But you know, they're very successful, so good for them. And it's a tough nut. I mean, that's the real question here: is can Google and its phones kind of eat into Samsung a little bit? Can they do that? And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they can, quite honestly, but I'm gonna watch it because yeah, I like the idea of Google trying to assert itself a little bit here. But with all these Google projects, right? Like, Google announces lots of stuff, and then sure, some of it they're just like, meh, forget it. They walk away from so many projects. So, you know, hopefully this has got very high level approval for this, because designing your own chips and all that, like that's a lot to walk away from. So I doubt they're going to walk away from it.
There's a certain amount of commitment just from the fact they pre-announced. I feel like you have to have a certain amount of confidence to say we'll be announcing this phone next month, right? Like, Apple, that is not an Apple move. It's very much a Google move.
But next year and the year after and the year after, like if it doesn't do well, like they need to stick with it. And honestly,
right.
Stick-to-itiveness is not a thing that Google has shown a lot of. They abandon stuff a lot, but this seems important enough that they won't. I don't know. Good luck, Google.
We'll see.
Sure. Also, if you have seen those designs of that phone, if you've ever wondered what would happen if you stuck a money clip on your phone, now you know.
I think there's a certain amount of, you know, I think that's an it's a choice, right? And I don't think it's necessarily a bad choice. There is a question of like, well, once you get to the point of realizing we simply cannot fit a camera on the back of our phone without making it thicker in some way, why beat around the bush, I think, is their answer. And it's like, all right, fine. I don't know how that will end up playing, but I'm sure, give it a shot. Why not? I mean, if you can build a whole larger bar in the back there and it ends up being something that people are like, you know what, it's not bad, and the trade-offs are like, we get a really great camera, a lot of people would make that choice.
It sounds like the camera bump on the new iPhones is rumored to be extremely large, to the point where I start to wonder, maybe you guys should start making your phones wedge shaped, right? Like just you'll get a little more battery space, and it'll be a smooth back, and it'll provide a little bit of an incline when you lay it on the table.
Sure, yeah,
maybe that's
like
what
that.
you all should be doing. But instead, just like bigger bump.
Yeah, we discussed this on the Rebound this week, and I think Lex made the point that like, making the, at a certain point, if your concerns are things like we need better cameras and we need more battery life, maybe thinness is not the metric you should be going for, right? Like, maybe some people would probably be willing to trade a camera, you know, like essentially a thicker phone for a camera that doesn't stick out and more battery life. And I wouldn't say that they're wrong. I mean, Lex's point was like, if you're going to make phones that are different sizes in terms of like the Mini and the Max and whatever, why not have a thicker phone as an option? It's possible.
right. Well, I think that on a pro model, especially, like, maybe that's the argument, is it's going to be a little bit thicker because it's got the pro camera in it and all of that.
And no one will say no to more battery life on a phone. No one.
No, it's true.
Yeah, it's a hard thing, right? Like, they're already doing everything you can to eke out what you've got in there, and you do pretty well. But if you came up with a phone and it was like, you know what, we made it like a millimeter or two thicker and it lasts like 3 days now, everyone would be like, great, I'll take a 3 day phone, right?
Let's see what else. I mean, they're really, it's been quiet. I spent a lot of time this week thinking about my macOS Monterey review, and also noticing all the parts of it that I don't really want to write right now because it feels not done. Yeah, right. Like, I'm not going to write about Safari, and I'm reluctant to write about to go deep into Photos even, because I'm not sure I believe that there aren't changes coming.
Oh, man. I had the Photos moment this weekend. I was talking about this a little bit in the member Slack. I went to search for an invoice that I knew I had taken a picture of. And I was searching. I was like, in Photos, like, oh, live text, right? Like, I'll search in Photos and it'll pop up the photo where it finds that text. And didn't work. And I was like, wow, it's
it's really disappointing this isn't a feature. And then somebody pointed out, it works in Spotlight.
Yeah,
I noticed, like, I will never think of searching for text photo in Spotlight.
I noticed this too, and I don't understand why it isn't searching in the Photos
choice.
App. It seems
it's
like
a
mistake to me. But
yeah,
like,
I agree.
Yeah, because I found the same thing, which is like I went to search live text in the Photos app and it wasn't there, but if I search out in the Finder in Spotlight, it shows it. Like what?
Yeah, that's weird. I don't understand what you're doing there. But there's a lot of little stuff like that, and you're like, all right, maybe this stuff will get tightened up in the last, you know, the rest of the betas or whatever. Quick note, maybe I can't figure out if my Mac version is screwed up in some way, but like, there's this Quick Note on Monterey, and then like, you know, the iPad, you use Quick Note, you go down that corner, you flick it up, and you can like type in that little window that pops up and everything. On Monterey on mine, it pops up a little white window, but as soon as you click in the window, it opens Notes. And it doesn't let me do anything in that little floating window. And I was sitting there going, is it broken on my computer, or is this just not implemented yet? Because that seems ridiculous.
Yeah, I wrote in my first look about it a little bit, and my thought is that I kind of like Quick Note as a feature on the iPad. On the Mac, it seems incredibly stupid, because literally you're just opening a Notes window. Like, who cares? Why make an effort to make it more of a quick floating Notes thing? Because you're literally just bringing up a Notes window. And you get
yes,
and you
but
get to
if
manage
I don't have
it.
Notes open, I don't know. It feels weird. Like, why? Yeah, I don't know. It feels like it's not doing anything right now, and I don't quite understand.
And while iOS is probably a couple, you know, like a month, or it's probably like 6 weeks from being final. I mean, it's probably even less than that, because they're going to have to load on the phones. But it feels like we're the iOS will ship. iOS 15 will probably ship, 6 weeks from now?
Assuming they
8 weeks from now, 7 weeks from now. Like, macOS is going to be a month after that, it feels like to me. Like, I feel like they're going to... That's been their pattern, is just macOS is an October thing, which is good because it gives me more time to work on it, but it also feels like macOS is even more kind of like not ready. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe I'm just being hopeful, and the truth is that this is what it's going to be like, and I should just embrace it. But I'm going to be. I think next week is when I have to start kind of giving up and taking the pieces in and taking the risk, because it's really all about risk that change undermines what you worked on. Like, I wrote a whole. Fortunately, I write that first look about the public beta, and so my whole it's not wasted that I wrote a whole section about Safari, but I'm not going to be able to use that section as the basis of my review in the fall, because it's already changed and it's going to change more. But at some point, you just have to take the risk. Just don't take any screenshots. That's my pro tip. If you're pre-writing content about macOS or iPadOS or whatever releases, write the words. Don't take the screenshots, because they'll change. Right. They'll move it a pixel this way or that way in the very last build, and then you'll be like, oh boy, and then you have to retake all your screenshots. I've been there. It's terrible.
Yeah. It's always a little bit of a crapshoot with these things, but I think... We've seen a lot more change this year, I feel like, than we've seen in many betas, especially with the Safari stuff. And so as it is, it kind of benefits you not to overcommit to like lambasting a feature that doesn't work right, especially, right? That's never a good call, because the answer is sometimes those things get changed.
Right.
But yeah, with a few weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, we'll see if they stick to their usual release schedule this year with all the problems that are, or obstacles, I guess I should say, that may come along. But it feels like they are kind of starting to lock stuff down and sort of get stuff a little closer to where it needs to be.
I hope so.
But yeah, we'll see.
My laundry's done. Very exciting.
Oh, good.
I'm going to have to move to the dryer when this is over. I guess I was going to say non-tech news, but that's not entirely true. My explorations of Python continue. I have replaced. So I forget. I told part of this story on next week's episode of Automators, which I'm on. There's a little forward promotion, not out yet. But I've been exploring Python. I changed our newsletter. The Six Colors newsletter that was built in AppleScript is now built in Python, which was a good learning experience. And last week, I discovered that the logic I put in to prevent chat transcripts, or, you know, analyst transcripts and big files full of charts to get inserted in the newsletter didn't work right. Unfortunately, I figured that out about 2 hours before the newsletter went out. I checked. And so I had to be like, what am I doing wrong here? And I had to rewrite. So that was, I made some mistakes there about what was going to trigger the if-then statement for that. But my latest thing this week is that I also, I have built now two Python scripts that replace graphics in my weather station page. So I have this weather station. It's the app is called WeatherCat. It talks to my weather station and it builds a web page for me, but it also logs all that data. And last week, I think I found the data files and realized that they're just text files. And I thought it would be a fun challenge to see if I could build. What I wanted to build was like a highs and lows for the last 2 weeks kind of bar chart. And I did that. And then I also yesterday I built a replacement for their, because they're it does generate charts, but they don't please me. They're like, I don't like them. I think they're ugly. And I was able to replace another chart, a temperature chart that was generated by the app with my own script, which just basically looks at the data files and then writes out a chart that gets inserted in my weather station page. And those have both been a lot of fun. Like it's fun to have to tinker with this stuff. And also, I think it's giving me, I had a barrier where I was like, well, I could do this in AppleScript, but that's dumb, right? like, why would I, even for me, that's too far for AppleScript. Like, there's got to be a better way. And so with Python, I'm like, oh yeah, I could do that with Python now. And I'll feel better about myself and all of that. Plus I know that if there's a script, if I take this lesson and I want to deploy it on like a web server somewhere, I can do that, which I can't with AppleScript because it only runs on the Mac. So I don't know what's up. There's a incomparable thing that I want to do that apparently I could do in Python, and I'm hoping that Greg Noss will help me do it because I don't want to do it, but it's there if I need to. And it's just been fun to explore that. I know I've mentioned it before here, and it's been fun to play with this stuff and figure stuff out. And also the act of, as you know, because you used to do this, like the act of programming something is also a little bit of a, like puzzle solving, right? Yeah. I know you like puzzles.
Yeah.
But like every time, this I was talking to Lauren about this because I said, you know, I think you actually might have liked computer programming because you like logic puzzles. And a lot of this at a high level, you know, what is computer programming? But looking at a problem and trying to figure out the right set of logical steps that get you the desired result. And that's so that's been fun, like figuring out how to parse a series of text files to find the high and low temperature for any given day, right? You have to think, all right, well, for the last 14 days, and you're like, all right, well, I have to parse the file, but what if it's the beginning of the month? Okay, so now I have to parse the previous month's file. Oh, but what if it's another, it's January? You're like, okay, well, if it's January, you got to go back to December of the previous year. Otherwise, you go back a month and you parse that month and the current month and the previous month, right? And it's this series of steps. It's like, then I have to cycle through every day, identify the days. If the value on this line for this day is higher than my current high, then set it as the new high, and lower than the current low, set it as the new low. And then cycle through all those and build up a list. And again, it's not super complex stuff, but it is a fun puzzle to solve. And then when I did my little chart, it's no longer highs and lows. It's continuous temperatures for a period. And so that was a easier, it turns out, but different problem. So it's been fun. It's been fun to stimulate my brain in a different way and solve some puzzles.
Yeah, I like that. My biggest problem with that is usually I just don't have enough puzzles. Like, I love doing those tasks, and it's like every once in a while I come up with something like, oh, I could write a script for this, or I could write an automation for this. And it's great when you do it, and I'm like, all right, I solved that problem. What's the next problem I need to solve?
I mean, let's be honest. This weather station page does not need this level of attention. But first off, it's been grinding my gears for like 15 years, where it's like, oh, I wish that this was better. I wish I could do this thing. And now I've got the data file and I'm like, oh my God, I could do anything. And some of this is like, is my replacement temperature chart that much better than the chart that it's been generating for 15 years? No. it is better. I can control it better. I can set the length of time. It looks a little bit nicer. But you know, was it necessary for me to do that? No, I just thought, oh, well, now that I know this data format, what else could I do? In fact, upon finishing, the first thing I thought, literally the first thing I thought was, oh man, if it ever rains again, I'm going to need to do a script to make a better rain chart, because the rain chart for the weather station is terrible. And I'm like, oh, I could do a rainfall the last 7 days bar chart or something. And like, it's an outlet, right? It's almost like,
sure,
this isn't important, but it's a fun problem to solve. And since I solved the parsing of that data file the first time, now it's all just iterations of like, oh, this is a slightly different problem. Yep. How will I do this? And,
oh, can I generalize all this into one script that does all of these things? Yeah. No.
Also, I'm using matplotlib, which is like plotting. It's a charting library, and it's fascinating because somebody was asking me, oh, you're going to do a Python script for your Apple financial charts? I'm like, I don't think I could make pretty charts with this like I can with numbers. That said, maybe I can. The problem is you're essentially doing a series of, they're not command line statements, but like that. You have to every function that changes the formatting of the chart requires a command, and the commands are so esoteric.
Oh yeah, they're ridiculous.
Half of the time I've spent building these things is Googling how can I get the axes to disappear, or how can I get that bar to disappear? And it's like, oh well, and the problem is also, it's like, oh well, you used to do it this way in the last version, but in the new version they've simplified it, but that broke the old version, so you got to find the new version. If you try the old version, it's not going
to
work.
I used to do that. So I had to write when I wrote CMSs, I had to write a stats page, and so I had to deal. I can't even remember what graphing library I was using almost 20 years ago when I did that. But yeah, it was the same sort of thing. It was like, all right, I've got all this information about like our log files and stuff for traffic on the server, and I got to figure out how to parse those and write charts that like make graphs of all of these things. And
it was awesome that a script can generate an image. Like, it's really awesome, and I've been really enjoying it. And you can get them to look good. It's just the details of it. And maybe there are better resources. There's probably a book about Matplotlib that I could look at that would be better. But the details online are so unhelpful. Or at least sort of impenetrable, because they're all about like, let me tell you, a lot of it is like, let me show you an example. It's like, I don't want an example. I want you to say, here are all the things you can put in and what they do. And I have not found that. I have found a lot of samples instead of like, here is how you do this thing. It's fine that my little temperature high low bar chart looks really nice. And so like, could I do the Apple charts? Maybe. Although then you run into things like it turns out that it's got a ability to put a value above a bar chart, but not a value to put an option to put the value in at the top inside of the bar chart. So for that, you have to start doing things like doing a loop where you determine the height and then subtract pixels from the height. And I'm like,
I remember my programming. I did a programming class in college that was Java. And one of the assignments, I remember the homework things being, had to write a program, and essentially, it basically, you told it to draw a smiley face. And the part I always had the most trouble with was anything related to drawing graphics, because trying to imagine how they would look on I'm plotting this on a plane, I've got coordinates, I'm trying to picture in my head like where this, what this means and how it's going to go, my brain would not do that. Give me anything to do with the logic or a database or anything, fine, but anything to do with graphics, my head just can't really process.
That's something I've run into, but it's a fun thing, and I feel like I've got another tool in my tool chest, and the best part about it is, as much as I know AppleScript, so much of what I was doing with it felt like it was the wrong tool for the job, because I just happened to know the terminology. And using Python for a little bit, I feel like I have a better tool for that job now. And that's a good feeling. Like, it's not, I was using a skill that I built up in the 90s, and since I had it, I thought I would apply it. And it seemed, even though it was totally not the right tool for the job, and now I've got another tool in the tool chest. That makes me happy.
Yeah. No, it's a good one to have. I tried to do everything with PHP for a long time because it's the one that I sort of remember the best. And I've played around with Python a little bit, and I have a friend who's basically was a professional Python developer. And everything I saw about it was cool, but it was just like, well, why learn it right now when I already have a thing that I can do?
I think the reality
would be a hobby
of PHP versus Python, and I'm sure our listeners are bashing their heads against their desks right now.
two writers talking about programming languages.
Oh, yeah. This is what you pay for, people. No, it is that my experience is that Python is more commonly available and executable, whereas PHP as a script that you run, that you execute, you have to like install Node, right? Don't you?
Yeah, right.
Really, in order to make it do that, and so that's the only thing. Because I've done that. All right, I have. I mean, my Swift bar tool. I at one point I had Swift bar plugins in my menu bar on my Mac that were doing Apple script, PHP script, Python script, and JavaScript. I was like, what? Now the Apple script and the PHP are both Python instead, but because that was how I was learning Python, as I was literally translating from one language to another and noticing the differences and all of that. But yeah, right. You need a reason and a project, but I'm excited now too that if we have something weird on our web server, like for Six Colors or for really for the Incomparable, especially, it happens over there where something needs to get built or fire off at a particular time, like the newsletter, I can do that now and then put it in the cloud where nothing ever goes wrong.
Safest place to be,
I think,
in the cloud.
My thought is more like if the place where the script executes is the website, then if the script doesn't execute, we got bigger problems. That's sort of my attitude there. Whereas if my Mac Mini crashes, the newsletter just wouldn't come out. And I feel better that it now is on the big Linode server instead.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, okay. It's a week where you got writers talking about programming.
Always good. Always so, just super professional.
Yeah. That's our watchword here. Okay. This has been your Thursday. It's Thursday, people. Don't get confused and think it's Friday.
Woo.
Thursday, at least recorded. You could listen on Friday if you've got that slot available, if you schedule when you listen to your podcast, and we are a Friday or a Saturday. I mean, you got to the
whenever
end.
You want.
So whatever day it is, we thank you for being a subscriber. And next week, we'll probably be back on Friday, but you never know.
Yeah, sure.
Bye, Dan.
Let's say yes. Bye, Jason.